sedition, like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition, commandeering airwaves from unknown positions.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
Recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and supported.
Ah, I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got to you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel, and with me, as always, is Mr. Smarty Pants.
Hey, today's a special day, Mel.
It is.
It's our Wisconsin Film Festival broadcast live from, where are we? Oh, yeah, the WRT Studios on Bedford Street.
That's right. We're keeping Estee's momentum going. That's Estmentum.
The Estmentum? The Estee on crack show? Yep.
She's not on crack.
Oh, okay.
So Wisconsin Film Fest Spectacular. The festival kicked off last night and runs through next Thursday, April 10th.
This year, the Film Fest boasts more than 100 film screenings at 7 different locations. Listen up, people. Here are the locations. The Bartell Theater, the Chase Museum of Art, UW Cinematheque, Music Hall, Union South, Barrymore Theater, and Flicks Brewhouse.
And I've got a sheet up in my backyard. I'm showing the...
Excellent. We're there.
Killed Pussycat Kill, I think, is tonight's showing.
All right, very good.
Tonight in the show, we'll be joined by 5 folks with film screaming at the festival.
One of them does, yes.
That's coming up soon, yeah.
But joining us first, and this is a tradition, and he's got that look on his face, which says, oh, my God, I'm going to have to talk on these guys' stupid show, is Film Fester coordinator Ben Reiser. And, Ben, unlike the last time I introduced you, it doesn't say I have to say anything nice about you. So, hi, Ben. Tell us about the fest this year.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you clarified that we're at the studios here, because I was going to say, what did you do to 4-Star? There's no more videos in this thing.
But I did bring in an assortment of theater candy just to kind of simulate the theater experience here. We've got some Goobers, we've got some Raisinettes, we've got Charleston Chew. If you'd like one, go ahead and take one. Yeah. They're only $9. So, again, simulating the theater experience.
We got some nice craft services here.
Yeah. what'd you select there?
I got the Reese's Pieces. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
It's the obvious choice.
Very good.
And also sort of like a, you know, more of a nouveau kind of.
Here.
So it's not one of the classics. Like, yeah. You do have some classics.
We've got some junior mints there. Just don't drop them in an operating room.
So do you have a theme this year?
I'm sorry.
Do you have a theme this year?
We're going to talk about candy for a while.
I just went through this last night on stage. I said, listen,
no
every
theme?
Year people ask us what the theme is. The theme is we're showing 174 films. You pick a theme showing 174 films. But we do have
film, that's the theme.
Film is the theme. Yeah. We do have some series within the 174 films. Like we've got a bunch of films about sports this year. We have a bunch of music-related films. Of course, we have our big screens, little folks, films for kids. We also have a couple of films whose titles I can't even say here in the daytime at WRT, so those are not the kids' films.
The Rolling Stone one?
Yes, the Rolling Stone one, and then a couple of the titles for this Wisconsin's Own Gone Wild shorts program
Where
we try to entertain the college kids with some risque material.
So what's the funkiest film? What's the funkiest film you've got?
In terms of smell?
No, those are the venues. I think we're talking about the venues.
Smell-o-vision.
Anything showing at the Barrymore is automatically the funkiest.
Excellent. Film.
But you've got some classics. You've got a John Wayne movie, which...
The Searchers.
Oh, that's a good one.
And John Ford.
And a beautiful, brand new restoration, which I got to see earlier this year, maybe the end of last year at the Music Box Theater. It is fantastic. It's like seeing The Searchers for the very first time.
Oh, wow. Mm. So I'm like, you know, I'm not a huge John Wayne fan.
No, I understand.
But John Ford I like, so it's a weird mixture there.
Yeah,
so.
You win some, you lose some.
Exactly.
You get Ford, but you got to deal with Wayne.
Yeah. So
Is that in color or black and white?
Color.
Okay.
Right. Oh, cool. Yeah. So you've got It Came from Outer Space. Right?
Black and white.
Black and white.
Yeah. So, but 3D. 3D.
3D. You got some 3D things. So.
Oh, wow. All right. I'm writing that down.
Sure you are.
I am.
You've got the person who made the original Creature from the Black Lagoon. Was that the...
Jack Arnold? He's no longer with us, but he did.
No, but I mean, we have one of his films.
Yes, we have one of his films, The Glass Web.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with The Glass Wall, which I think is showing. We might have just ended, actually.
You've got all kinds of glass things there this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, that's another theme.
There's a theme.
There's a theme. The theme is films about glass.
Yeah.
And they actually do have the dead guy, too. So
we did. We're rolling him out. Yeah,
right. Well, The Creature from the Black Lagoon is a great movie.
Okay, we're not showing it, but if you
Well, I know, but I mean, he knows what he's doing.
No, he does. And actually, The Glass Web, the film of his that we are showing, is also a terrific 3D film and not a sort of typical, you know, like swords and monsters, you know. But more of a film noir, which just happens to be in 3D. And it's really great. A fun mystery with great performances.
And so, there's 3D cabbages or something in there. Is that what I think I read that? Where you're like, cabbages are coming at you?
Yeah, yes. So, but that's a spoiler, and let's pretend we didn't say that.
3D cabbages, be there.
How about some of the Wisconsin films?
How about them?
I don't know.
Come on, BR, this is your chance.
You got the candy. You got to talk to us.
Well, a couple of these big sports movies are Wisconsin. We've got one that is about Japanese Green Bay Packers fans.
Oh, yeah.
These are people living in Tokyo who go to their favorite sports bar every week to watch the Packers in the middle of the night. And they also have like pre-recorded Packers games that they watch. And then it's a documentary about the time that they all decided, hey, let's fly to the States for the first time ever and go to Green Bay and see a game live at Lambeau.
Oh, what fun.
It is fun.
I have a friend who was in New Zealand one time, and he went into a bar, and he had a Packers jersey on or shirt or something.
And you never saw him again?
Well, no, the owner went crazy, and he was, oh, come here, and he took him to the back room, and he had all this Packers stuff. He had like a little Packers shrine back there, and so, I mean, it's a worldwide religion.
It is a thing. When I was living in New York City, and my wife, who's from Wisconsin, was living with me, we were Packers fans in New York, and it's a lot more fun being a Packers fan, like, out of Wisconsin, because you're not getting beaten over the head with it all the time. You sort of feel like a rebel. Like, I'm in New York, but I'm rooting for the Packers. But
there you go.
Here, it's like I'm embarrassed, like, about all the state teams. And, you know, but living in Madison with the Badgers and the Packers, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's worse than that. I mean, you can watch, like, sort of the low-rent British comedies, and almost invariably, there's some, you know, schlub that's wearing a Green Bay Packers outfit that lives in Chelmsworth or something,
Well, it's usually not big enough to cover his beer belly.
Exactly.
Let's not talk bad about Chelmsworth.
So how did you go about winnowing down to all the people that wanted to be in the festival as opposed to the 175 you ended up with?
Have you ever read Shirley Jackson's The Lottery?
I've lived it.
You know, we had about 150 submissions in the Wisconsin Zone category, and we spent 4 months watching these things, and then we talked about them, and actually wound up picking 50 of them, which I think is a lot more than we usually do. I don't know. We just had a really great crop of films this year, a lot of terrific short films and some really great features, including like that Packers one. We've also got another sports documentary about Howard Moore, a former assistant coach for Badgers basketball, who was in a terrible car accident with his family.
That,
so that's a sports / human interest documentary, which is terrific. We've got a bunch of great experimental shorts and even an experimental feature in this year's Wisconsin Zone selection. So I don't know. Somehow we do it. You know, it's just once you do it once, you sort of get over the idea that every film you have to give real consideration to. There's some films you put on and you just know, like within 5 minutes, like this isn't going to fly.
Yeah.
So. I think the lead there, though, is 50 Wisconsin films, and that's the most ever. From Wisconsin?
Since I've been with the festival, this is my 13th year.
It's pretty impressive.
So maybe a dumb question.
It could also mean that there just were no other good movies from the rest of the world. So we had to fill some slots with Wisconsin. Well,
we don't deal with the rest of the world anymore.
Yeah, we're boycotting films from other states.
By the way, never mind America alone. It's just Wisconsin alone.
Exactly. Yeah, we're putting up a wall, too. Yeah. So maybe this is a dumb question, but have things like TikTok affected the types of movies you're seeing submitted? You know, do you see a lot more short ones or kind of weird ones?
Vertical format.
Yeah.
Like people
that's it. Yeah.
More dancing.
People sitting in their car talking to you. And
it's funny. We showed a film not too long ago at UW Cinematheque that was originally slated to be at the 2020 Wisconsin Film Festival, but that was the one that was canceled due to COVID. This film, Dinner in America, which never really wound up getting a theatrical release, again, because of COVID. But some for some reason, now that it's been streaming on like Hulu for the last year, the kids have caught on and started making all these TikTok memes out of scenes from Dinner in America. And suddenly it's this hugely popular film, so much so that we brought it to Cinematheque and showed it for the first time on a screen in Madison, and the theater was packed with college kids.
Yeah, very cool.
So TikTok's had a positive effect.
Oh, very good.
Believe it or not. And I wouldn't believe it, but I saw it for myself.
Well, we don't believe anything you say.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So Ben Reiser from the film festival has been with us here for the last few minutes.
Yeah, I've got to run over to Chazen now and introduce my first film of the day.
Yeah.
Who's next in the studio?
I heard
Doug Rosenberg?
He's the next person to talk about a film, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so, but Lewis from Four Star is going to be with us next.
He's calling live from the Bartell or something.
Yeah, he's
right?
in line here. We're going to get that. So,
well, nobody's at Four Star today. You guys aren't, Lewis isn't.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
I've got some films before I came over, if anybody wants to know. I got The Killing Field, Death of Stalin, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, very good. So
I am going to take these Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, please, they're for you. That's the high level of courtesy we have here.
By the way, this is finally my appearances here are paying off. This is the first time I'm leaving with something. Leaving more than I came
It takes us about 13 years to warm up to people.
Same here.
Thanks, man. It was great to see you.
Pleasure as always.
Okay, bye-bye.
Some like them fat, some like them tall, some like them short, skinny legs and all. I like them bald, I like them proud, and when they walk, no, they draw a crowd. Say, you got to have a mother for me. Yeah. Come on, look here.
And we're back, and you're listening to the Mellon Floyd Summer Replacement Show, Wisconsin Film Festival edition. We do have some goodies to give away today.
You mean in addition to the candy?
Yeah, we have fine selection of theater candy. That's for the guests, though. So pants, we have something to give away today.
Yeah, that's right. We're giving away ticket vouchers for you to redeem at any film festival screening with seats available. Ticket vouchers. And we're going to give our first pair away right now. So if you're the first caller at 608, getting a lot of background noise there, 608-256-2001, you can win the ticket vouchers. And the only catch is you'll have to come down to the station. The station is 118 South Bedford Street, and you got to pick them up before 8 p.m. today. So let me say that again. You're going to get call in right away. You're going to pick them up down here at the station, 118 South Bedford Street, by 8 today. Number to call, 608-256-2001.
And if you slack on that, then you'll need to wait until Monday. That number again, 608-256-2001. Be the first person to call. And if you miss out this time, we'll be giving away more in a few moments. And because of the referendum in Wisconsin, you're going to have to come down with 9 different people to verify your identity to pick these up. So,
but if you have $25 million, you can come in and no problem.
That's true. So, joining us for more picks from the festival is 4-Star Video's Lewis Peterson. Live from the line at Bartell Theater, where the Zodiac Killer Project screens at 1:30. Hey, Lewis.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I sitting in the lobby of the Bartell, witnessing people buy candy. Did go and claim my seat. I made sure to sit close to the exit so I could get away so I wouldn't have everyone in the theater looking at me.
Well, we have candy down here, so just so you know, you're missing out. But
okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I had to make a decision. I had the ticket, and I was like, oh, it's, you know, I think the station to here, I don't know if that's physically possible in 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can't get anywhere from here in 10 minutes, so... So what are you in line to see? I mentioned that earlier. The Zodiac Killer? Tell us about that.
So Zodiac Killer Project, I haven't seen it yet. I'm about to. But from what I understand, it's a movie about a guy trying to make a movie about the Zodiac Killer and failing. And in the process, kind of deconstructing the true crime genre and the tropes that have become popular over the last few years with, you know, Netflix and other production companies. kind of pumping them out.
Sounds great. We love movies about failure.
We can relate to those.
Exactly.
Oh, so what else do you have your eye on this year down in the, as far as the festival?
Well, so I actually, I'm on vacation this week. I have 25 tickets. I won't tell you all 25 of them, partially because I don't have them all memorized, only a few of them. But I have, see, this is actually convenient because now I can, I'm looking at my phone anyways. I can look at my notes and it won't seem rude.
I'm sure everybody's looking at their phones. So.
Yeah, that's true. Except when you're in the movie. You have to turn your phone off in the movie.
Oh, okay.
But a few of them looking forward to. Sunday morning at the Barrymore, the new David Cronenberg movie, The Shrouds.
Oh.
Starring, I think, Guy Pearce and Vincent Cassel. And it's Cronenberg working through his grief over his wife passing away in a very Cronenberg way, which involves, you know, probably organs that are usually on the inside going on the outside, things of that nature.
Oh, no.
So that's, yeah, Sunday at 11 at the Barrymore, I believe. Next one I've got on my list, Gazer. So this one I actually kind of deliberately have not read a ton about it. It's apparently a new neo-noir movie. That's how the guy describes it. I did see, to kind of loop in with your discussion of social media with Ben earlier, I saw an Instagram post about this movie with a prop from the movie. I guess also kind of Cronenbergian. It's a cube made out of flesh, and then there's some headphones also made out of flesh that are plugged into it. And from the description of being a noir, I was like, how does this fit? I am very intrigued.
Okay, so you're going to a movie about the Zodiac Killer, you're going to a Cronenberg one, and one about a cube of flesh. Do we have to worry about you, Lewis?
Wait, I'm making a note of this. I just wanna, what was that last one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you know.
What does your browser history look like?
Oh, I mean, you got to use incognito mode, of course. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for 11, 12 years. Are you guys working up a psychological profile?
It's complete. Don't worry. We're just adding little frills to it now.
There are a lot of missing dogs and cats in the Isthmus area. So.
Okay. So I guess another one.
Do you have any non-serial killer type things you're going to go see?
Yeah, any daisies or...
No. I guess another one I have on my list, it's actually partially the end of a personal achievement for me, which is there's this Korean filmmaker I really like. His name is Hong Sang-soo. He's made, I think, 33 or 34 features. I've seen all of them except the one that's playing at the Wisconsin Film Festival this week.
Really?
So it'll be... I'll have seen his complete filmography, and he's, if you're familiar with him, he usually makes two or three movies a year, so it's a feat to keep up, but it's called By the River. Now I'm about to describe the plot and you're going to put it in my psychological profile again. no murder, but a professor is accused of impropriety and people are kind of telling their different versions of this event that happened by the river, hence the title of the movie. That's one I'm looking forward to. I think that one is screening tomorrow and then also on Tuesday. I think I'm seeing it on Tuesday, but there's two screenings.
Bump.
Did you fall over, Lewis, or was that one of your victims?
Can you not hear me?
No, we just heard a big thud.
A giant thud. We thought it was the catapult or something.
Me tapping my phone. Okay. On a cell phone exactly. Right now. So.
All right. Well, we're gonna leave here before we get incriminated anymore. And
Lewis, I just want to say, I just went to your place of business, and as always, a wonderful experience looking through the vast archive of excellent films that you have there.
I'm glad to hear it. Yep. And, you know, we've got a lot of Wisconsin Film Festival films, and we'll have even more after the festival is over and in the coming months.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us while you're in line, or I think it sounds like you're in the theater actually now. So enjoy the Zodiac Killer movie and all your other serial killer
enjoy
movies.
Enjoy is the right word.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
well,
you
thanks
for having me on.
Thanks. Yep. Have a great day, Lewis.
Thanks, Lewis.
Bye bye.
Right.
We were speaking with Lewis Peterson from 4-Star Video with his expert curation of this year's festival screenings. You can find more of his picks in Tone Madison at tonemadison.com. Hey, we're a third of the way through the show, and it's about time we turn to some of the filmmakers at the festival.
But before we do that, let's do another giveaway, because giveaway, that's what we like to do here.
Sure.
A pair of ticket vouchers for you to redeem at any film festival screening that has seats available. And we're going to give our second pair away right now. So be the first caller at 608-256-2001 to win the tickets.
The only catch is that you'll need to come down to the station, 118 South Bedford, to pick them up before 8 o'clock today. And if you slack on that, then you'll have to wait till Monday. That number again, 256-608-256-2001. Be the first person to call, and if you miss out this time, we'll be doing another giveaway in just a few minutes.
We're giving it away.
We are. So.
All right, so you're listening to the Wisconsin Film Festival Spectacular here on the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. And joining us now is Madison's own Douglas Rosenberg. He's a professor of video performance and installation at the UW-Madison Art Department. And he's the director and the screenwriter of a film making its Midwest premiere this Sunday at Music Hall. The movie is The Sea. And it is a black and white film, luscious black and white. I find color so distracting. It's a screen dance staged against the landscape of the Baltic Sea. Let's hear a clip.
Vi är gamla män nu. Kastar oss mot tiden, mot vinden. Mot våra historier. Vi är gamla män nu. Drömmer om havet. Rör oss som glaciärer. Också vi försvinner över tid.
That was a clip from The Sea, a reflection on male intimacy, community, ritual, and art. The narrator there was saying, we are old men now, thrashing against time, against our histories. We are old men now, dreaming of the sea, moving like glaciers, disappearing over time. Filmmaker Michael Douglas Rosenberg is here with us in the studio. Hi, Douglas.
Hi. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. We've got an assortment of theater candy there.
Help some yourself. Candy appropriate some, for your lifestyle.
We've got some goobers and junior mints. And
how do you see yourself? Do you see more of a Charleston Chew?
I'm more of a Mike and Ike guy. But
Well, you know, the closest to that is Good and Plenty.
Don't, no.
No, no.
Good and Plenty is not Mike and
Ike. I didn't mean to commit heresy right away.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so I'm starting to watch this movie, and I'm thinking, of course, of the Totentanz, but this was the Labentanz. This is these guys, a dance of life. And I was so moved by that when I was seeing it, because I've been thinking a lot about how we can live in this world and affirm all of our various human needs without having to destroy the world. And these guys are doing that.
I have to say just yes. And I want to just say that sitting here with you guys and just listening to that clip is very emotional for me.
Yeah.
This is really the very beginning of the public life of this film. And it was quite an experience for me, but to hear, just to hear the intro and to hear that little bit of the film on the radio, which is again kind of extraordinary, a dance film on the radio.
Yeah,
thank you for doing that. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it was a very lyrical film. I mean, it was, you know, these 10 older guys, which I saw 10 older guys gathered. I just assumed it was a sale on New Balance shoes, but no, they were on this island, and it's where Bergman had shot some movies, right?
It's, well, more than that. It's the island is called Fora. Excuse my accent, but it's in Sweden. It's in the northernmost tip of Sweden, and it is literally at the edge of the Baltic Sea. The island ends in the sea.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was in the 60s, Bergman was looking for a location for a film, flying around in a helicopter, and he flew over this island, as I understand it, and fell in love with the island. It didn't shoot on that island for the film he was looking for, but later shot a number of his films on that island, mm-hmm. Persona maybe being the most well-known of those. And he built a house there. He built a studio. He built a screening space. It became his life for mm-hmm. the rest of his life. And I had the opportunity to go there a couple years ago with another film of mine. I'm forgetting the name of the film. At any rate, I'll think of it. But at any rate, a film I had made a couple years ago found its way to that place, and every summer they do a gathering sort of in honor of Bergman's legacy. They bring filmmakers in and other artists who do work that's sort of references Bergman or inspired by Bergman, and I ended up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked the landscape, and I had seen those films. I'd seen Bergman's films a lot when I was younger. Spent a lot of time in, I'm from the Bay Area, so I spent a lot of time in a theater in Berkeley that used to show art films, or mm-hmm. they called them foreign films in
sure.
those days.
Sure.
And you'd see one after the other. I'm sure you had that in Wisconsin, I'm sure, too. And Bergman's films were very important to me from then on, and very influential. And so to be in the, literally on Bergman's Island in that landscape a couple years ago, really impacted me, and I had decided sort of at that moment that that was the place I wanted to make this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very beautiful film. I mean, you have these 10 guys, and that there's all this, they're essentially just kind of choreographed through the whole hour, and I kind of got this feeling they were almost like the sea. They were sort of like the tide coming in and out, and they were moving around like the waves, and it was just very beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. The men were not, for the most part, are not trained dancers or performers of any kind. They live on or near that island in the place called Gotland. And I had met some of, not those men, but other men when I was there. And I had done a project years ago here as part of the Triennial, I think, and what's called Breakfast for My Father. And it was really a piece about, it was a piece of, that came about thinking about my father as he got older and remembering that he used to go to this little coffee shop in the Bay Area where we lived in the mornings, and there'd be all these men that, many of whom he knew, they knew each other, and they'd all be in the coffee shop having breakfast, reading the papers. Sometimes they'd sit together, sometimes they wouldn't. But it occurred to me that I didn't really have that kind of a community, I guess, here in Madison. And so this piece took place over a couple months at Mickey's Dairy Barn. And every, I think it was Monday morning at, I think it was 8 o'clock, I would, with the permission of Mickey's, I would get a table in the restaurant, and I would wait for men if they wanted to come and have breakfast with me and honor my father and everybody's fathers. We would have breakfast, and I would buy breakfast, and we would talk, or we would not talk, whatever the case was. And it went on for, like I said, a few months, and it was really, really wonderful, really lovely. But that was more than 10 years ago. You know, it was quite a while ago. But I'd always wanted to continue on that thread.
Mm-hmm.
The ritualistic, spiritual elements of it especially appealed to me. The scenes where they are passing the bread around and the droning, the almost chanting kind of sound
yeah.
of their voices
yeah.
at the same time. The branches reaching up towards the sky and the hand movements were also reaching up towards the heavens. I found those very affecting.
Thank you. You know, as I get older, I want to make projects that express sort of my entire life experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm Jewish, and there's a lot of ritual and in and around being Jewish, and a lot of sort of physicality.
Sure.
And so I try to kind of just use what I have and what feels right at the time. And none of those guys were Jewish. It wasn't, certainly wasn't a Jewish film particularly, mm-hmm. but that's where a lot of that.
At one point there was whistling, and I was thinking to myself, because so many of the activities they were performing are activities that probably Neanderthals performed, right? Who was the first whistler? That was the first. That was the question I asked myself when I heard that.
The first ever in history.
Yeah, history. Yeah, that's what I want to know. Who was the first whistler?
Well, we'll look that up for you.
Got me. Yeah.
Or it's a wonderful movie. It's like I say, it's very lyrical and
thank
and,
you.
And it's got an accordion in it, so people in Wisconsin will like it.
It does. Yeah. So. It does. It's a Swedish accordion and a Swedish bagpipe.
And bagpipes too. Yeah.
Sackpipa.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Douglas Rosenberg, a professor of art at UW-Madison and director and screenwriter behind The Sea. It screens Sunday at 2 at Music Hall. It screens along with two other films, With Fire and Breath, A Dying Art, and In Silence is the Offering Presented. Douglas, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. And
I really enjoyed
your film.
So. Yeah, thank you both.
Thanks for being here. So, okay. All right, we're going to have some announcements here, but after that, Would You Sleep in an Igloo? How about in Casino Royale? I'm down for both of those, probably. So.
Oh, I'm called Awful Rowing Towards God, and I was thinking of this song.
All aboard for Night Train!
Support for this program comes from the Konopka Lab.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
The 2025 Wisconsin Film Festival is going on now, all over Madison until April 10th. There are over 170 films of all shapes and sizes for you to choose from. This includes some of the best cinema from all over the world and right here in Wisconsin. Choose from comedies, dramas, experimental, animated, and student films, as well as documentaries, restored classics, films for kids, and more. You can catch these films at the Bartell Theater, the Barrymore Theater, and four venues on the UW campus. The last 4 days of the festival will take place at Flick's Brewhouse, located at the Easttown Mall. A guide to all the films and where they will be shown is available in the March issue of the Isthmus and online, and tickets are available at wifilmfest.org. The Wisconsin Film Festival is happening now through April 10th on a screen near you, helping keep local arts alive for almost 50 years. This is WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. It's 1:32, and this is the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel, and with me in the studio is Mr. Smarty Pants, and this is our Wisconsin Film Festival show. The film festival is going on now through next Thursday. We have more filmmakers joining us this afternoon. The next film we're previewing is an experimental short called Heart-Shaped. It's a part of Wisconsin's own programming at the Wisconsin Film Festival.
Right, and it's described as an, quote, intimate correspondence and scenes from the Don Q Inn, which I just discovered was in Dodgeville. I'd never been there. So let's hear a clip from the film. Is it clipping?
It is not clipping.
Uh-oh.
All right, we're gonna pass that on now, and that clip we didn't hear.
Yeah, oh dear, sorry about that little technical glitch.
It's from Heart Shape, screening tonight at 6 at the Chazen Museum as part of a series of experimental shorts from Wisconsin filmmakers. It's written and directed and produced by Grace Mitchell and Sophia Theodore Pierce. They join us virtually now. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. So tell us about the Don Q Inn. What the heck is that thing?
Yeah, so Don Q is a themed hotel, or at least the basement of the hotel is themed. So each room is a different theme, like the igloo room or the cave room or the casino room. And then the rest of the hotel is actually just regular rooms. But so... that's just, you know, an inspiring place to set a scene for something to happen or not happen.
I wasn't familiar with the Don Q, but our news director said she slept in the igloo room one time. So did you guys stay overnight there in any of the weird rooms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which ones?
Multiple times. Well, we stayed in the rooms that are featured in the film. So it was quite a DIY effort. We were guests, but also making a movie. So we stayed in the casino room, which is in our film. We stayed in the heart-shaped room.
Yeah,
I had to sleep on a heart-shaped bed, which proved to be more difficult than I thought it would be. And I was sleeping there alone, so I can't imagine two bodies. But maybe that's the point.
Maybe you should sleep. I don't know, which direction was your head? Was it at the bottom or was it at the top?
By the aorta.
Yeah. Top, but I maybe should have flipped it around.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because that way you could have your heads together and your bodies could do the two lobes, you know, could
exactly.
Fill the two lobes. Yeah.
Next time I will know exactly how to sleep.
Excellent.
So there's going to be a next time.
Hey, I have a question for you. You know, this was an epistolary movie where you're writing letters, I assume back and forth to each other. Is that right? Because you're identified as S and G. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah, you're writing to each other. Okay. So, you know, there's great epistolary novels, you know, Pamela, Young Werther, things like that. And they all have naughty bits, but your naughty bits are pretty naughty. It's mm-hmm. like you're really talking about some really serious stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, so we started shooting this film before I found out that I was going to move away. And it was our second collaboration. We made a film before this that also centers around correspondence because it's a big through line in our work. Grace and I both worked with the late, great Carl Bogner, who's a very important in the Milwaukee poetry and film scene and encouraged correspondence as a part of making work. And so that's been part of our collaboration from the beginning. But when I moved away from Milwaukee, we had to finish the film and we started writing letters to each other as a way to kind of connect the dots and figure out what we were going to do. Yeah. And then that became an integral part of the film itself.
Yeah. And I think the naughtiness of it is like us channeling characters that would be at the hotel, like trying to bring in ourselves as guests. Or at least like have the same sort of tonality as like those themed rooms.
Mm-hmm. So were these, I did like the correspondence back and forth. It was kind of like a dialogue, but stretched out a little bit. You say these were letters. Were these actual like paper letters you were sending back? I was assuming they were texts or something, or that you were maybe part of a group for the Department of Defense, you know, something like that. You were just sharing information, but
yes, they've been leaked. We were emailing each other.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But it
had kind of like a classic feel, as Pant said here. It's like one of these old, mm-hmm. you know, French short stories where M writes to J and then J writes to M, and yeah. so it had that kind of feel to it, which was really cool.
Yeah, and we've sent each other postcards, and I think the sentiment was supposed to come across like, you know, paper letters in the mail, right. And have that sense of slowness to it
mm-hmm.
as well.
It did. Yeah, it was nice. So who were the actors, who was the talent in here? Were they people you knew, or where'd you find, or are they just people staying there, or what?
Entirely non-actors who are friends and family, people we kind of wrote roles around, I would say, or like pictured in the rooms. I don't know if Sophia, you have more to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the same way that we treat our collaboration as a way of staying in touch, you know, we really use filmmaking as a way to stay in touch with our performers, who are all also intimate collaborators and friends. So that is kind of a big justification. This is a way to bring all these people into a space together and get their input.
Yeah, and I think as directors, we wanted to have kind of like a familiar, intimate space. And working with friends and working with family kind of had that built in already with it, and then allowed us to explore the direction of the film in the room.
Two phrases that really stuck in my mind when I was watching the film were, my body does not feel like my own. That was a really intense thing to say. And the other one was, how to live sick. I thought that was something about that, and then it branched off into like living with sickness, living in a society that's sick, and so on. Is that actually a sentiment? Is that a sentiment of the characters, or is that a sentiment of one or both of you?
I think maybe a little bit of both. I mean, our the person who Sophia was talking about, Carl Bogner, I think had just been diagnosed with a terminal illness around that time, and we both had our bouts of sickness and illness and injury going on. So I think it was in the air swirling, and that was, you know, kind of a hyperbolic maybe reaction to it, but yeah, that's where it was coming from, at least for me.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. So, all right, well, I'm afraid we're pretty much out of time here, so just want to say thanks, and did enjoy your movie. Do you have other ones? I shouldn't ask a question when I say we're out of time, but
yeah, we actually each have a film that's playing in the same program of our individual work.
Oh, what are those?
My film is called Half Halt, and Grace is actually performing in it.
And mine's called The Year.
Well, very nice. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Grace Mitchell and Sophia Theodore Pierce. They're the writers, producers, and directors behind the film Heart-Shaped, which screens tonight at 6 at the Chazen Museum as part of a series of a dozen or so experimental films. Grace and Sophia, thanks for being here today. It was nice to chat with you.
Thank you.
Thanks you
for having us.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with Grace Mitchell and Sophia Theodore Pierce. They're the writers, directors. Oh, I already said that. And yeah, yeah. I'm not used to working from a script here. Can you tell? You are listening to Mel and Floyd. Stick around. This is our Wisconsin Film Festival. We're going to be doing a giveaway here pretty soon. Do you want to read the giveaway thing there?
Do we have a giveaway?
Ticket thing? Giveaway number 3?
Oh, yeah. You bet. Let's do it. Let's see. So just in a second, we're going to be talking Playground Pals and psychological horror. But before we do that, it's time for our third giveaway of a pair of tickets vouchers. You can redeem these for tickets to any film that has seats available at the Wisconsin Film Festival. So here's the deal. You call in if you're the first caller when you dial 608-256-2001. We award you the vouchers. Speed is of the essence.
That's right. As a reminder, we'd really like you to pick these up this afternoon at the WRT Studios, 118 South Bedford. If you can't come and fetch them by 8 p.m., then you'll need to come on Monday. Please do not try to pick these up over the weekend. If that all sounds like a plan, then dial 608-256-2001. Be the first caller, and you'll win our third and final pair of ticket vouchers. All right, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show, live with our Wisconsin Film Festival Spectacular. Our next guest this hour is the director of a nightmare version of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That's you. That's you. Well, take the rest of it then.
So, yeah, as Mel said, it's a nightmare version of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or perhaps it's a realistic version of Mr. Rogers' Nightmare. What do you think? But don't let the Playground Pals fool you. It's not such a beautiful day in the neighborhood as the cheery world of puppets descends into an eerie hellscape haunted by the freak. Let's hear a clip.
Oh, what's that? Another delivery.
I wonder what it is.
Excuse me. Oh, darn. Seems I missed the post lady again. I can't seem to catch her. She has such a busy schedule delivering mail to the whole town, I never even get a chance to say hello.
What's Marty got for you, Jimbo?
Well, looks like we just got a letter. That's odd. Usually, a return address goes here. A return address tells you who sent it. That way, you know where you can send a little thank you.
What's it say?
Freak. Who sent this?
Joining us now is Aidan Leary, the director behind Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round. It's the first completed feature for a series of modestly budgeted horror films called Terror Town. It screens tonight at Union South. Hi, Aidan.
Hi.
So, Aiden, I'm never going to use the word pal again. I just want to let you know that. That fair word enough. Gets used, and it gets used in a way that's like really makes your gorge rise after a certain point. So I'm just let you know, I'm swearing off that word.
Amazing.
Thanks to you.
Very glad to have ruined the word for you.
You know what was pointed out to me after we made the film, actually, is that my name is, you know, Aiden Leary. My secret first name is actually Philip. So my initials are P-A-L, pal.
Oh my God.
Completely unintentional. Oh. I don't know if that was like a subconscious thing or something.
That'll be the coda at the end.
But so now my name is ruined for myself. Because of that movie.
So when I started watching the film, I thought it was going to be very trite. I thought it was going to be he's a child molester, right? Which is like really bothers me because there's this trope that if a guy likes kids and is friendly and kind, then you got to shame him by saying he's probably a child molester. But that isn't what's happening in the film at all. That is not what's happening at all. What's happening?
Well, like you said, we really wanted to be true to the format. You know, we didn't want to like make fun of children's media. We wanted to show what happens if children's media kind of slowly devolves into something scary, but still stays true to what it is, and the character is still fighting for what the child show is. You know, we kind of pitched the movie as Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood meets Evil Dead 2. Mm. You know, it's like Mr. Rogers, but if the host is like trapped in this like nightmare version of the show and like surrounded by these puppets that are all trying to kill him, and he's slowly going insane and trying to break free, essentially.
Excellent.
The look is really nice. I mean, you've captured the Mr. Rogers type look, but then there's also kind of this underlying, fear and horror going through it. There's a little bit of Pee-wee's Playhouse in there too. But
there's a whole bunch of things in there. Really, when writing the film, my co-writer and I just spent like a month watching nothing but like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Bear in the Big Blue House and Blue's Clues and Dora the Explorer. And there's a little bit of everything in there. The Wiggles, there's some, I don't know if anyone's familiar with The Wiggles, but like that was, when I was a kid, that was huge. And so we really just riffed on all the things that we watched and loved as kids. And like you said, with the look of everything, we shot it all like, you know, with, a lot of our crew we took from a PBS show called Don Quixote, which is actually produced by Fred Rogers Productions.
Oh, really?
So our crew that built the set was actually from that show, and a lot of our puppeteers are also from that show.
I was going to ask how, because it had that look and feel.
And our composer
like that,
is also like someone who composes children's shows. Like we just took people who make children's shows, and we shot it on a set that you might see in an old like 90s, 80s kids TV show, and we even shot it multicam. So a lot of that, you know, most movies are shot with like a single camera. You set up one shot, this is it, boom, we got it. Let's move the camera to the other side. Children's TV, especially of that era, was shot on multiple cameras. So we really did what we could to try to recreate that vibe and that experience that I grew up with.
Yeah. The actor was terrific. You could kind of see this slow, decay as it starts to sit in. It reminded me, and this is going to kind of sound weird, but it reminded me a little bit of Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad as his character got more and more evil as time went on.
Our the main character we kind of wanted, we auditioned like so many people for that role, and the actor who ended up playing the characters is a man named Michael Gillio, who's insanely talented. He was actually a retired actor. He acted in a few movies back in like the early 2000s, but since then had become like a full-time screenwriter. Yeah. So he just wrote like the Dungeons and Dragons movie, and he wrote this horror movie called Dark Harvest. And our producer Joe was like, I know this guy. I think he's perfect for this role. And he reached out to Michael, and Michael was like, listen, Joe, like I'm no longer an actor. I'm a writer. This is what I do. I don't know if I want to do something else. And Joe was like, just read the script. And Michael read the script, and he said, okay, that's so weird. I have to try.
I got
to
tell you, though, this guy, he reminded me exactly of my boss. It was really kind of hard. Like, now, that, like, sing-songy kind of, like, you know how sometimes a manager can get you to do things by being your pal?
Yes.
You know, this exactly. But I got to say, I'm not generally sympathetic to horror films. I really am not. It's kind of like pornography for those who love violence, right?
Totally.
So what does horror teach us? Why is horror a good trope to use for something like this?
Yeah, so I mean, I take a lot of my philosophy from like different horror directors, and I read a bit of Freud, actually. There's some Freud that goes in there as well. But You know, one of my favorite quotes came from Wes Craven, who's one of my favorite filmmakers. He made Scream and he made Nightmare on Elm Street.
Sure.
You know, people, I'm going to misquote him. It's not going to be an exact quote, but people always asked him, okay, why do people want to go to the movies and be afraid? Mm-hmm. And his answer and my answer is always, well, people don't go to the movies because they want to be afraid. People go to the movies because they are afraid.
Yeah.
And what we provide them is a safe and sometimes fun way of confronting that fear. Mm-hmm. And there are actually studies that show that people who watch consistent horror movies are actually better prepared for negative emotions within their own lives. So in this weird way, if a well-done horror movie, the one that really does care about the characters and about the feeling of everything, it can actually do that. And
unlike Mr. Jensen, who wasn't prepared for his own negative feelings.
He was not prepared for his negative feelings at all. He's in fact like repressing them to a point where he's just going insane, you know?
Oh. All right, well, we're pretty much out of time here, so I just want to say we've been speaking with Aidan Leary, director behind Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round, and this show loves monkeys, so this was, we had to have
Agents of Chaos,
here.
Yes.
So,
I'm terrified of monkeys.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, that was my greatest fear, we literally took that and put it into the movie.
I gotta say, the scariest thing is you had the monkey, it was like a person in a chimpanzee suit, but then they had human hands, which was very creepy.
Busy little human hands.
It was very
yes.
creepy. So, all right, that's at the tonight at 8:30 at the Marquee at the Union South, and you'll be in attendance along with a solo cast member Michael. How do you say his name? Gilio,
Italian,
and the producer Joe Swanberg. So, no word on whether the monkey will also make an appearance. Oh God, I hope not. So.
Just got two words for you.
Thanks, pal. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a great time. And I can confirm that we have two monkey puppeteers, and both of them are going to be in attendance.
Oh, very cool.
Right. Along with our other puppeteers.
A little forward promotion there.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right. Our last film is a documentary called Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. It charts the ups and downs of the Milwaukee Brewers' march toward an American League pennant and the franchise's only appearance in a World Series. Features interviews with former players and the late broadcaster Bob Uecker. Let's hear a little clip from that.
It's a wonderful line. That's what I'm here for. I'm a ball player. And that'll tell you a lot about the 82 Brewers.
Everybody loves their hometown team. But there is something different in Milwaukee.
You know, Don Sutton said it best. He said every player should have the privilege of playing in Milwaukee. And he was right.
Milwaukee is the best kept secret in the world.
It's a blue-collar town, and we were a blue-collar ball club.
Every single guy had his own way of being different. There was not a normal person on the roster.
That's a clip from the film Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. That's screening tonight at 5:30 at the Music Hall. It's part of a series of experimental shorts from Wisconsin filmmakers. It isn't a short, though.
A couple hours.
It's directed by Brookfield native and UW-Madison alum Sean Hanisch.
Correct.
Okay. He joins us right now. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
So why did you make a film about the 1982 Brewers?
Well, you know, it started out as such a passion because I was 14 years old, and I sat in just above the first base dugout for a number of games that season. My family had season tickets, and so, you know, it was something special about the characters on the team. Mm. You know, you could really relate to them. I mean, they would come out in the parking lot after games and you know, meet with the fans there and you know, I'd have a soda, but they'd have come and have a beer with you. And we really thought, you know, the season was so exciting. There were so many ups and downs. But the thing that really stuck out was kind of the love affair between the city and the fans and, you know, and that team. Because, you know, now having a little perspective, being just a little bit older, there was a moment where in the early 80s, and I remember this, the factories were closing in Milwaukee, and there was a lot of joblessness, and it was a recession, full blown. And this team came along, and it gave everybody hope.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the season, after, I mean, the Brewers had the lead going to the bottom of the sixth in the seventh game of the World Series, and they lost. And when they're at their lowest moment, the entire city shows up and the state shows up and throws them a parade of some say up to a million people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what love is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's here, what, 43 years later, and people still talk about this team. They still love the team. I mean, they have bobbleheads all the time for, you know, Gorman and Vuk and Raleigh Fingers, and people, you go to a game and people have t-shirts or, you know, jerseys that say Ogilvy on the back. And so, I mean, it's got staying power.
Well, this is the first documentary that I've directed. I've come from, you know, narrative film, but you look at the cast of characters, and this is, you would hope to have characters as interesting, mm-hmm. you know, in a narrative feature as are characters from this team.
Mm-hmm.
I was very impressed that Raleigh Fingers' mustache is still quite elevated, quite gravity-defying.
It's funny. I said, man, you must spend a lot of time on that. He goes, I just do this. It twists the ends up. He goes, if it was hard, I wouldn't have done this one.
I thought Moose was looking pretty good, too. I mean, he's like, what is he, 68, 69, something like
yeah,
that?
Moose looks better now than he did when he was a pitcher. He's ripped.
Yeah, I know.
He's also the smallest major league player ever with the nickname Moose. He's only like about 5'9" or something.
Yeah, right. It's kind of a crazy nickname for him.
Yeah, so, but that was a startling thing too, because I lived in Minnesota then, but I followed this team and I liked it, and it's startling to see these guys now. I mean, they're all in their 70s, and but you could kind of still see the sparkle in their eyes especially when they would talk about the season.
And that was the joy. First of all, the joy of meeting your heroes, your childhood heroes, was really it's a wonderful once in a lifetime opportunity that I got to do 16 times. Yeah. And but it did, once you got them down, they would walk in. For example, Cecil Cooper walked in and we were down in Houston interviewing him, and he said, I don't know how much I'm going to remember, guys. I think you might be wasting your time. 3 hours and 15 minutes later.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And that's how it was. You know, you took them back through the season and then the memories started flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I say is, I think the guys were at the right point in their lives mm-hmm. to talk about this, because they were young enough to remember everything, but they were old enough not to really care what other people think.
Yeah.
And therefore, you had Robin Yount doing, really revealing his soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end of the
film. And Yount was always somebody who kind of kept to himself a lot. I mean, he wasn't somebody who gave a lot of interviews, didn't really like the spotlight all that much. So that's interesting.
It was, it really caught us by surprise. It was our first interview, and he invited us into his house, which was really, I mean, it's Robin Yount. But then for him to reveal himself and really, honestly, gets more of his, after we did the interview, his wife came up to me and she said, he's never expressed that to me, and I've known him whole life.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
He was ready to bear his soul.
Yeah, so there's something almost mythic, too, about the fact that people love this team so much, even though they didn't quite climb the mountain. I mean, they lost that seventh game of the World Series. It's almost, I mean, this is going to sound totally overblown, but it's like biblical. It's like, you know, Moses not getting to the promised land, and,
right,
you know,
yeah.
but that's a trope in mythology, and I think yeah. that's, people are responding to that.
Yeah. I think they are too. Mm-hmm. And how many sports films do you see where the team doesn't make it to the top?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the romance of the sport.
Right.
I mean, that's why we start out with that opening quote from A. Bartlett Giamatti.
Mm-hmm.
It breaks your heart. It's designed to break your heart.
Right, yeah. Right.
So. I just want to say that you did a lot of work on this film. And what I mean by that is, I'm looking at this, and it's like a kaleidoscope. There's a moment, a moment, a moment, a moment. And you're really at so many cuts in there, so many different things that you did to put all that information together in a way that flowed really well, but gave you such a great breadth of what was going on.
Thank you. We had over 45 hours of interviews and
yeah.
well over 100 hours of archival footage.
Yeah.
Spent over 2.5 years in the edit bay.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got, it's funny, we got to the very end of the process and I walked into my colorists and he said, do you have any idea how many shots you have in this film? I said, I don't know. And he said, you have 3,400 shots in this movie.
See, that's, there you go. I'm writing it down because I was noticing this as I'm going through there.
He said, that's more than an action film.
Yep, yep. That's the way it felt, too. That's exactly right. So that's what I'm pointing to. Yeah, it's the way it felt when I was watching it.
Good observation.
All right, we've been speaking with Sean Hannish. He's the director behind the film Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. You know, and you know me, I could talk about this for hours. But
and he will after you leave.
Yeah. That's screening in just a few hours at Music Hall. Sean, thanks for coming in. And thanks for doing this movie.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. And thanks to everybody for joining us, for listening, and all the people who came in. Have some candy. We've got some theater-grade candy over there, too. So, and then thanks for joining us for another Wisconsin Film Festival Spectacular. The Film Fest opened last night and runs till next Thursday. You can get more information, of course, of the festival at wifilmfest.org.
And thanks to our guests this hour, which have been Ben Reiser, Louis Peterson, Douglas Rosenberg, Grace Mitchell, Sophia, Theodore Pierce, Aidan Leary, and Sean Hannish.
Thanks to the folks of the Wisconsin Film Festival, especially Katrina Simyab and Ben Reiser.
Thanks to the WRT crew, specifically to Lainey, hurrah, our receptionist and ticket keeper, and to Amelia Geis, our social media storyteller, and Eric Schwartfeger, who's our documentarian, both talented visual volunteers, and they're sitting right here in the studio with us. I think you can hear them breathing if you listen really closely.
The show is available on demand at WRT website and on the podcast. Thanks every week to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, who gets the show up and running every week on the pods. You can subscribe to it on all the major platforms, including Spotify.
Yeah.
So,
and you almost couldn't tell, but WRT news director Charlie Pittman was our producer. It was so seamless, you wouldn't even know she's here. And it's hard to believe that she does this thing because she kind of only sort of gets paid for it. But it's the papal indulgences that have been getting her through.
That's
so.
Right. So, all right, time to declare. The weekend. Enjoy your weekend. Sean, thanks for coming in. So, all right, stick around. Who Cooks For You with Real Jaguars up next? We're running a little late here, as we tend to do on these shows. So it's 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Pants, it was great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, hot pants. Look, hot pants. Won't make.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 4th.
Let us embrace the darkness, not the political dark ages being pushed on us by today's regressive right-wing forces, but nature's own pure darkness of night. Unfortunately, we Homo sapiens have largely blacked out nature's billions of beacons.